and with folded arms, but often lifting his hand in a descriptive gesture, he spoke before Pharaoh and said, "Rough was Esau, my uncle, the mountain goat, twin of my father, who forced the passage before him when they were born. Red and shaggy of hair was he, a bungler. My father was smooth and fine, tent-bred, and son of his mother, clever in God, a shepherd, while Esau a hunter was. Always was Jacob blessed, since before the hour when my forebear, father of both, resolved to bestow the handed-down blessing, for he declined unto death. Blind the old man, his ancient eyes would no longer obey him. Only with hands he saw, feeling not seeing. Before him he summoned the red one, his eldest, longing to love him. Go, shoot me game with thy bow, he said, my forthright, hairy firstborn. Cook me a savory meat, that I may eat, and then bless thee, strengthened thereto by the meal. Red one went off to the hunt. Meanwhile the mother wrapped the younger in goat skins round his smooth limbs, and gave him a mess, spiced and seasoned, from goat's flesh. With it he went to the master into the tent, and spake, Here am I back, my father, Esau, thy hairy one, having hunted and cooked for thee. Eat, then, and bless thy firstborn. Come now to me, come near to thy father, my son, spoke the blind old man, that I may feel with my seeing hands if you are truly Esau, my hairy one, for it is easy to say. And felt with his hands, and felt the fell of the goat where the skin was bare, and there it was rough like Esau. Red it was not, but that the hands could not see, and the old eyes would not. Yes, there can be no doubt it is you, said the old man then. From your fleece it is plain to me. Rough or smooth, so it is, and how good that one needs not the eyes to perceive, for the hand sufficeth. Esau art thou, then feed me, that I may bless thee. So did he smell and eat, and he gave to the wrong one, who yet was the right one, the fullness of blessing one might not recall. Then came Esau from hunting, puffed up and boastful at this his great hour. He cooks and seasons his game where all eyes can see him, and bears it within to his father inside the tent. But there in the tent was he cheated and mocked as a humbug. Truly, he was the wrong, right one, since the right, wrong one had come before him through mother's guile. Only a barren curse he received, since naught else was left after the blessing was spent. What jesting and laughing were there when he sat down wailing aloud with his tongue hanging out, and the fat tears plumped down into the dust. The cozened clodpate, whom the clever one tricked, skilled and familiar in all. Mother and son both laughed, the one in a sonorous alto, the other clear and rather piping. Both shook their heads.
What a grotesque tale! Cried Amenhotep. A barbaric farce, capital in its way, if rather depressing, too. One hardly knows how to take it. It makes you feel like laughing and crying both at once. The wrong, right one, you say, and the wrong one that was the right one. That is not bad. It is so crazy that it is witty. But may the higher goodness preserve us all from being both right and wrong, so that we need not sit blubbering in the end with our tears plopping into the dust. What do you think of the mother, little mamma, wrapping goatskins round the smoothness, and helping the old one and his seeing hands to bless the right one, in other words, the wrong one? Tell me if you do not find this an original lamb whom I have summoned before my presence. My majesty permits you to relate another jest, Kabire, that I may see whether the first was not good just by chance, and whether this spirit of clever roguery is really better than known to you, because familiar. Let me hear.
What Pharaoh commands, Joseph said, is already done. The blessing one had to flee before the wrath of the cheated. Travel he must, and travel to Naharin, in the land of Sinear, where relatives dwelt. Laban the clod, a sinister man of affairs, and his daughters, the one red-eyed, the other more lovely than stars in the sky. So she became his all, and more to him than all save only God. But the hard taskmaster made him serve 7 years for the starry maid. They passed like days, but then the uncle gave to him first, in the dark, the other, unloved, and only much later the true bride, Rachel, the mother sheep, who bore me with more than natural pains, and they called me Dumuzi, the true son. This only in passing. Now, when the star maid was healed after bearing, my father would be away with me and the 10 whom the maids and the wrong one had borne him. Or he made as though he would go to his uncle, who was unwilling, for Jacob's blessing hand was a prophet to Laban. "Give me, then, all the pied sheep and goats of the flocks," said he to his uncle. "They shall be mine, but yours all those of one color. Such is my modest condition." So then they sealed their bargain. But what then did Jacob do? Took wands from the trees and bushes, and peeled white stripes in the bark, so they were pied. These he laid in the troughs where the flocks came to drink, and mated after the drinking. Always he made them see the pied wands at this business, which worked on them through their eyes, so that they dropped pied young, which he took. So he grew rich out of all count, and Laban was laid by the heels through the wit of the roguish god. Again the mother and son were much diverted. They laughed and shook their heads. A vein stood out on the king's sickly forehead, and tears were in his half-shut eyes. "Mama, mama," said he, "my majesty is very, very much amused. Striped staves he took, and gave them the pattern through their eyes. Ring-straked and speckled, we say. And ring-straked and speckled Pharaoh could laugh himself at a jest like that. Does he still live, your father? That was a rogue. And so you are the son of a rogue and a lovely one." "The lovely one was a thief and rascal, too," Joseph supplemented his tale. "Her loveliness was no stranger to stratagems. For love of her husband, she stole her gloomy father's images, thrust them into the camel's bedding, and sat on it, and said in her beguiling voice, 'I am unwell with my periods and cannot stand up.' But Laban searched in vain, to his own chagrin." "One on top of the other," cried Amenhotep, his voice breaking. "Listen to me, Mama. You owe me an answer whether I have not summoned before me a highly original, subtle, and sportive lamb. Now is the moment," he suddenly decreed. "Now is Pharaoh ready to hear from this wise youth the interpretation of his difficult dreams. Before these tears of merriment are quite dry in my eyes, I will hear it. For as long as my eyes are still wet from this rare laughter, I fear not the dreams nor their meaning, whatever it is. This son of jesters will tell Pharaoh neither such stupidities as did the pedants of the bookhouse, nor yet any frightful things. And even though the truth he tells be bad, yet these lips, so given to smiling, can scarcely shape it so as to turn straightway these tears of laughter to tears of mourning. Soothsayer, is there need of any vessel or apparatus for your task? A cauldron, perhaps, to receive the dreams out of which their meaning shall rise?" "Nothing at all," answered Joseph. "I need nothing between heaven and earth for my affair. I just go ahead and interpret as the Spirit moves me. Pharaoh needs only to speak." The king cleared his throat and looked over in some embarrassment at his mother, excusing himself by a little bow for her having to hear the tale all over again. Then, blinking with his laughter-wet eyes, for the sixth time he conscientiously related his now stale dreams. Pharaoh prophesies. Joseph listened unaffectedly, in a respectful posture. While the king spoke, he kept his eyes closed. But in no other way did he betray the profound abstraction and concentration of his being upon what he heard. He did something else, too. He kept them shut for a little while after Amenhotep had finished and was waiting, holding his breath. He even went so far as to let the king wait a little while he stood there, not looking but aware of the attention focused upon him. It was very still in the Cretan loggia. Only the goddess mother gave a ringing cough and played with her ornaments.
"Are you sleeping, lamb?" Amenhotep asked at last in a tremulous voice.
"No, here am I," answered Joseph, as without undue haste he opened his eyes before Pharaoh. Even then he seemed to look through him instead of at him, or rather his gaze, resting on the king's figure, broke there and turned inwards in contemplation, and all that became the black Rachel eyes very well.
"And what say you to my dreams?"
"To your dreams," Joseph answered. "To your dream, you mean. To dream twice is not to dream two dreams. You dreamed but one dream. That you dreamed it twice, first in one form and then in the other, has only the meaning of emphasis. It means that your dream will certainly be fulfilled, and that speedily. Furthermore, its second form is only the explanation and more precise definition of the meaning of the first."
"That is just what my majesty thought in the beginning," cried Amenhotep. "Mother, what the lamb says was my own first thought, that the two dreams are at bottom only one. I dreamed of the goodly cattle, and then the ghastly ones, and then it was as if somebody said to me, 'Did you understand me? This is the meaning.' And then I dreamed of the ears, the full and the blasted ones, as a man will seek to express himself and then try again. 'In other words,' he says, 'so and so.' Mama, here is a good beginning which this prophetic boy has made without foaming at the mouth. Those botchers from the bookhouse bungled at the very start, and nothing good could come after that. Continue, prophet. What is the single meaning of my double royal dream?"
"Single is the meaning like the two lands, and double the dream like your crown," Joseph replied. "Is not that what you meant just now, though you did not quite say it, yet said it not quite by chance? You betrayed what you meant in the words, 'my royal dream.' Crown and train you wore in your dream, as I darkly perceived. You were not Amenhotep, but Neferkeperu-Re, the king. God spoke to the king in his dream. He revealed his future purposes to Pharaoh, that Pharaoh may know and plan accordingly."
"Absolutely," cried Amenhotep. "Nothing was clearer to me. Mother, nothing was more certain from the beginning than what this peculiar kind of lamb has said, that it was not I who dreamed, but the king, insofar as the two can be separated, and insofar as not even I was necessary in order that the king should dream. Did not Pharaoh know it, and swore to you at once next morning that the double dream was important for the realm, and therefore absolutely must be interpreted? But it was sent to the king not as the father of the lands, because he is also the mother of them, for the sex of the king is double. My dream had to do with matters of life and death, and with the black underworld. I knew it, and I know it. But yet I know no more," he suddenly bethought himself. "Why is it my majesty utterly forgot that he knows nothing more, and that the interpretation is still to seek? You have a way," he turned to Joseph, "of making it seem as though everything is all beautifully clear, whereas so far you have only told me what I knew already. What means my dream? What would it show to me?"
"Pharaoh errs," Joseph responded, "if he thinks he does not know. His servant can do no more than to prophesy to him what he already knows. Did you not see the cows as they came up out of the water in a row, one after the other, and followed in one another's steps, first the fat and then the lean, so that there was no break in the row? What are they that come up out of the casket of eternity, one after the other, not together but in succession, and no break is between the going and the coming, and no interruption in their line?